session number 19793, Reel 3.
And I was alone in the house. And one night, SS man, he was drunk. It was the first night. I was alone in the whole house. And he went around the house and he tried to come in. He wanted to come to me, but he was drunk, probably. But I slept so deep, I didn't hear anything. But the next day, beneath my house was a children's home, the kindergarten where I worked before. And then there were three Jehovah's Witnesses also. They said, and the supervisor, because she heard it, she feared, she had more fear than me. I didn't even hear it. She said, "Didn't you have fear? Didn't you fear?" I said, "What happened?" Yeah, the whole night was a soldier, SS soldier. He tried to come in your house. I noted this. And this was one experience. And the next day my mother came, or 2 days later the Russian came near you. You heard the bomb and you heard something. And my mother, she worked also in a home. But then she came to me. She said, "Magdalena, I will not leave you alone." I said, "Mother, you cannot do it. They will kill us." The SS said, "I should not leave nobody in." She said, "Doesn't matter, I will not leave you alone. They make everything with you. I fear if the Russian came. What should you do?" Then I went to the telephone. I called the commandant Zuren. And I said, "Look at, my mother is here. I am Magdalena. I am in the house of Lerner. And my mother fears that because the bombs come, that I am alone in the house. Can she sleep in my house one night?" "Yes, let her sleep there." So I prepared the bed and everything. I said, "Now you sleep with me." And my mother was quiet. But the bomb came more and more. Then my mother said, "We will not stay here. We are going to our sisters, that at least we are together." And then we went back to the concentration camp. They were already prepared for the march, the death march. And we met our sisters and we went then out to the death march. We were on the way about 3 days until the Russians, they overcame us, and we slept then one night in the forest between two fronts. Later on, the Russians, the Germans, they saw them back, and we slept in the night in the forest and didn't know what happened. The whole night, the fusils beneath us and over us and so. And in the morning, it was quiet. And then my mother, she went up. We were about 25 Jehovah's Witnesses, women. And she said, "Maybe now," it was so quiet, she looked to the street and many dead bodies, many horses and refugees crying, children losing their parents. So it was so bad, I don't know what happened. And then my mother said, "Let's go." We didn't know where to go now. The SS, they left us, they disappeared, and the Russian, and my mother came back. She told us what happened in the street, in the road, and she said, "I don't know what to make, wait a little bit." And so we prepared, and then immediately two Russian boys came, soldiers, with horses. They said, "What are you doing here?" My mother said, "We are prisoner," but we couldn't understand. But we had one girl. She became a witness in the concentration camp, a young girl, a Russian girl. She said, Ove, I like to be a witness. And she came with us, and she translated. And so the Russian boys, the soldiers, they explained them what happened. They explained them we were between two fronts. And they couldn't believe that nobody nothing was happened with us. And so we asked them, what should we do? They said, go home, the war is over. Yeah, we had 500 kilometers, how we could go home? And then my mother decided, the Russians went. So my mother decided to go back. She said, you know, we take our baggage and go back to the village we passed the day before. And everything was up and down. The Russians were drunk and we didn't know what to do. And suddenly a man came to us and said, what are you doing here, sisters? It was also a prisoner, a man. He worked in the farm of this Dr. Kersten. He was a doctor of Himmler. And he said, come, what happened to you here? And he took us to the farm, to this Dr. Kersten. And then there we had to walk about 20 minutes and we passed for dead bodies and everything was up and down. And so we were there about, 6 weeks. I got sick there again. And 6 weeks, then we tried to get some papers from the Russian government to come through. And then anyway, we reached our home 5 months after this liberation.
Can I just take you back briefly to leaving Ravensbrück camp on this march? Could you describe that in a little bit more detail, what it was like to leave the camp, how many people there were, and what the conditions were like on the march?
We went, as I was with his family, with his SS family, I slept there also in the house, so I had not too much contact, besides my mother. My mother had to enter every day. And so we went back, and then they were all ready in files in preparing the death march. They told us they would bomb the concentration camp, but they didn't reach it. It was then everything too late. And we saw many, many people in files, and they are going, and the SS got their paper, what march they had to go. And so they took us, we were about, 100 people, about 25 Jehovah's Witnesses. We tried to maintain to stay together. And we marched about, I think it was 3 days. One, and in between, we slept in the forest then, one day and the second day, and then they bombed us, we hired us, we had a big truck, a horse truck, but we had to push it and to take it. The SS had his things upon this. And then we went under this truck to hire us when the bomb came. And then we went ahead about 10 or 20 kilometers. And then again the bombs came. And so it was 2 or 3 days, I cannot remember. Until then it was so bad. Some were shooted, some were asked for Red Cross and for medical. My mother said one soldier was shooted in the back or something. She saw it, I didn't see it. And then everything was upside down, and my mother observed how the SS went away. And so she saw, now we are free. And she called Jehovah's Witnesses. She said, come, we go here in the forest. It was beneath the road was a forest, a new forest with small trees. And she said, come, we hire us here. And then we went into the forest. and we watched through the trees, the road. We heard only, I don't know, soldiers, and then about 1 or 2 hours. And then my mother said, "It seems to be the Russian already. The voice is like the Russian. They are already there." And then it was quiet. What to do?
I won't take.
Tell me a little bit more about your contact with the SS children, and also about what you saw when you walked back at night through the forest.
So the children home, it was about 20 minutes to walk through the forest. But the children itself, they were okay. They were from single mothers. They had no training at all. They did what they like, and so sometimes we had some problems. For example, when I wash the bed sheet, I hang them up. Then a child came with his dirty hand. He took some sand and made it dirty, the bed sheet. And so I beat him a little bit. I shouldn't, but I did. And so the children later on, they spoke only about us prisoners. We were about 4 women there, Jehovah's Witnesses, to keep the household, to wash the laundry, and to cook. And so the SS women, they came once, they said, "What happened with our children?" And in the week, and when they took their children along, they asked the children, and the children, they are only speaking about the prisoners, about Marie, about Lise, about Magdalena, and they don't tell anything about you. What are you doing? Do the prisoners, do they do everything? So they notice that the children, they trust more in us than in the other supervisor.
And in the evening, when you had to walk back to the camp through the forest, what did you see then?
We saw from the forest, we had to go 20 minutes about, and then we saw the fire, mostly every day, and we said, again, they burn up the Jews, or they burn up people, the fire, the crematorium. It was terrible to see every night. And later on, a couple of years ago, I visited the first time after 50 years, concentration camp in Ravensbrück, as now it is a museum. They told us they made a monument, and the monument fell down. And they noticed that all the ash from this crematorium they put in the sea, in the lake. And so there were no fundament, was ash and ash and ash, so many, and they were surprised about. I don't know how many they killed there.
Do you know whether any Jehovah's Witnesses were ever gassed and burned?
No, Jehovah's Witnesses, not. I don't remember. As I remember one lady, as I mentioned, this gypsy lady, they took along, we thought they will kill her, but later on I heard she was not killed.
So you didn't live with the fear that you could be next?
With the fear?
You didn't live with the fear that you could be killed in the same way.
Okay, we mentalized ourselves. Maybe if they kill us, they may kill us. Sometimes, yes, sometimes was a period, maybe 1 week, they treated us bad. They would beat us. My mother, they put in prison inside of the concentration camp. But we went ahead. It doesn't matter if they would kill us or not. We just went ahead.
From today, Magdalena, from the viewpoint mm-hmm. of today, how do you think this particular experience has shaped your life or your beliefs?
You passed many experiences. The first years after this release was a little bit difficult because I couldn't see any children anymore because I had so bad experience with these Nazi children. They were so bad. Some they ran away. They, after some days they came back, and so they I didn't like any children. Later on, natural, I loved children. And we went ahead. Sometimes we remember, sometimes it's terrible to remember this, but then speaking about nice things, we made our family, we made some music. Of course, my brother Karl, he came home very sick, very sick. When I came home, after 5 months release, my father thought we were not alive, because he asked the Red Cross and to look for us, and then we reached home. I mixed my brothers up with the youngest one because it was already 6 years when they pick up my smallest brothers and sister, and so we had to sure we had and then we. It was strange, so many children, everybody had another character now, we had sometimes my father was between, he made peace the first time, one had this idea, the other had this idea, but then it was very nice, we were together, all together, we start again with our music, and was a nice family.
Were you able to forgive? Were you able to forgive what happened to you?
Forgive, yes. Because some prisoners, I remember one woman, she laughed about me, she spoke about me, she said, you are crazy, and so on. So I spoke with her, why I do this, and then she changed her mind. And so we never hate person. Yes, we hate the bait things, the bad action, but we don't hate person. We is really a bad experience we had, but we said Jehovah will know it. We speak with the people. We try to make our life normal.
I was interested that you married a German who had been in the German army and who'd also been a member of the Hitler Youth. How were you able to reconcile those very different backgrounds?
Because I knew my husband as he was a Jehovah's Witness already. He was about 2 years baptized, and his parents, they studied secretly the Bible while he was in prison, in military, in the war. And then he came out of the war. He didn't like, he didn't believe anything. And then he reasoned with his parent, and then he became a Jehovah's Witnesses. And we met us in the branch office in Germany. They called him, and they called me to work there, and we meet one another. And we don't think about the past. We see the person, how he is. Then he told me his experience, and I told him my experience, but this was it. We see the present, we see the person, and he didn't know. He saw the ghetto also. He was young, he said he didn't really know, but he imagined something was wrong later on. But
could you describe your husband's background to us, his being in the Hitler Youth and so on, and what he had seen?
in the Hitlerjugend.
His experience in the Hitler.
He had one brother more. His father, he came out of a very, very nice family. And the parents were very unit also. They had only these two boys. And my husband was then, after learning his job, he was then as all the soldiers in the war. And everything what he did by heart. He loved to do it. But later on in the last year, he was also, he got, how do you call it, something in his a fusil or something.
An injury.
How do you call it? Herida, they say in Spanish, herida. He was hit.
Was he wounded?
Wounded, that is. He was wounded, and the last time he was in a hospital, and then they took him to France as prisoner. But the last month he saw there something went wrong. He saw also the ghetto with the Jews, and then he said, something is wrong. And then later on he was in, he was still after the war, 2 years in France, in a terrible prison, as prisoner. And then he was released, came back to home, and he studied really the Bible. He started to study before, and then he started again, and he was ready to work. Volunteer in the branch office in Germany, and they called him and they called me in the same time, and we met us and we worked together. I was his secretary in that time. He had the expedition to send all the parcels. We worked there day and night, and so we married after 2 years. And this is about 50 years ago, and he died 1 year ago.
I'm just going to ask you, Magdalena, if you would say two or three sentences for me, because I need just a few words from you that I can use in the cutting room. You talked about a little Jewish boy at school.
And half Jewish.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I wonder if you could give me a sentence in which you actually say there was a little Jewish boy at school, or just in a natural way that you can say that.
Yeah, this boy was in my classroom. His father was Aria, a German, a musician, and the mother was a Jew. But as he was Protestant, and he had this certain teacher who was so against me, this teacher, Lehrer Velpot, he calls, he was against Jehovah's Witnesses, but he was a good friend with a priest, the Protestant priest. And this boy, this Jewish boy, Alfred Naumann is his name, he was also a Protestant, as he was a good friend, a Protestant, and so the teacher was not against this boy. And so this boy didn't say anything. He never was against us. I know that he was always polite to us. But he never joined with the other children when the master, the teacher said, this Kusrus, they should go to Moscow, and so on, so. But this boy never. And some years ago, when they made the Purple Triangle video, this boy, this Alfred Naumann, I met him again. He's also a periodic man, and he was present. He said, I'm ashamed that I didn't find more in favor of you. And he explained me everything. and this boy today he's suffering. But as his father was not a Jew, they protect him a little bit. But all his relatives, they were killed. And this was a shame. He said none of his relatives, the relative has business, were businessmen, were good friend of ours also. And he told me that he said, I am ashamed until now that I didn't fight in favor of you. I didn't fight more in favor of you. I said, it doesn't matter.
The other thing I'd like you just to describe is your house and the sign that was mm-hmm. on your house and mm-hmm. what happened to that sign.
Mm-hmm. My father, because he moved there to help, there were no Jehovah's Witnesses. So a voluntary, he was already retired from his work, so he moved to Bad Lippspringe. He rented a big house, and then he painted, prepared everything, and he said if there not yet was not yet prohibited Jehovah's Witnesses, is what...
Maybe just better stop.
You asked first?
Yeah. I will, yes.
Yeah.
Who else has been? Right. Could you describe the exterior of your big house and the sign that your father put on it?
Yes, as my father rented the house, because in Bad Lippspringe, we moved there, there were no Jehovah's Witnesses. And then to make it known, because the house was on the main street, and if there were passing Jehovah's Witnesses, our brother, we call them, he made the sign on, read the Golden Age, lesen Sie das Goldene Zeitalter, read the Golden Age. This was a magazine today, we call it Awake magazine. On both sides, so painters came, and they made a nice paint. And so, by this reason, many, many Jehovah's Witnesses which passed there by bicycle or any, they came in to salute us, was a nice place. But later on, when it was prohibited, the work of Jehovah's Witnesses, then the police came and said, Mr. Kusro, you have to remove this sign because you know now Jehovah's Witnesses, they cannot have this. My father said, okay, I paid much money for that. If you don't like it, remove you it. I cannot do it. So they sent some painters and painted it. But you could read through the paint. It was so strong made. You could still read for years, but later on they repainted it and then it disappeared. But by this, many Jehovah's Witnesses, they passed still in because they saw the sign, Lesen Sie das Goldene Zeitalter, read the Golden Age magazine.
I'm going to ask you to give me another sentence, Magdalena. Mm-hmm. You talked about one woman in your barrack who did sign the paper to mm-hmm. renounce her beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
I just need you to say that, I need you to just describe that briefly, but I need you to say that she was a Jehovah's Witness. If you can do that.
I didn't get the point. You need me to say?
Yes, you described the woman in your barracks who
yeah.
signed the paper.
Yeah.
To... Okay, you can
start
now.
So I know two women. One woman, she is still alive today. She signed that she is not, she renounced to be a Jehovah's Witness. But later on, I met her in Hanover. She was so sad, she was so depressed. She continues until today, a couple of weeks I met a friend of her. She said she's still alive and a faithful witness until today. She signed, but then she went home because she had some pressure of the family, but she continued to be a Jehovah's Witnesses until today.
I think that's okay.
Yeah. It's a continuation of
I'll introduce the interview first. This is an interview with Toby Bieber on the 15th of October.